Affairs will come to order. Committee, welcome guests. Good to have you visiting today. Thank you. Just a reminder that we're on the internet today, audio and video. We're happy for that. We are going to introduce possible committee's legislative drafting requests, and actually we have one here we're going to do. And we're going to have Mr. Brian Bowe appear before us to explain the reason for this, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Bowe, and I'm here this afternoon representing the National Association of Independent Insurers. There was a little bit of a mix-up in a drafting request that was being processed through Representative Butler's office. He was requesting two bills relating to the State Accident Insurance Fund, and in a subsequent conversation with a staff member at Legislative Council, they, in error, believed that Representative Butler desired only one of those bills to be drafted and set one aside, and it was not completed by the dropping deadline. So if the committee would be so kind, we would appreciate it if you would authorize that drafting request to proceed.
Thank you. Members, you will find that your position, a copy of that draft, and this is the process that's been set forth for us to do to make this happen. So I'd be happy to take a motion on that.
Mr. Chair, I move that a letter be sent to Speaker Simmons requesting permission to submit a measure drafting request to Legislative Council.
Thank you. Representative Doyle has moved that a letter be sent to Speaker Simmons requesting permission to submit a measure drafting request to Legislative Council. Any further discussion? Any objection? So moved. We'll close our work session. And now we will open a public hearing on House Bills 2653 and H.J.R. 20. And now we're going to do that. We're going to bring these to a... Yeah. We're going to hear these together today. We'll go back and catch 2654 after we have heard these two. So with that said, I would like to call forward Senators Courtney and Duncan, please, and Representatives Hass and Knope, please.
Nice.
And Senator Metzger will join us as well here in just a bit. All right, gentlemen, we will invite your testimony if you would. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
You go first. Go ahead.
Chairman Wilson and members of the committee, my name is Mark Hass. I'm a state representative from House District 8, and I want to thank you for letting me appear here today and for listening to what I have to say. And I also want to thank Representative Knope and Senators Duncan and Courtney for joining me in this effort, and I hope that just this message in and of itself is clear that this is a bipartisan effort that is not drawn along partisan lines. You will receive a lot of figures and statistics here today about how much special influence money there is in our campaign system. There's too much. And all that money is like dumping broken glass into the gears of our democracy. This legislation may take some courage for us to pass. After all, incumbent politicians like us do better under the status quo. But we all know the status quo is broken, potentially corrupt, and we can no longer defend it. So our proposal is simple. Make a minor change in the Oregon Constitution to allow limits, then set those limits in statute. H.J.R. 20 asks voters to amend the state constitution so limits can be set. As you know, without that amendment, the courts and recently the Attorney General have ruled contributions are an expression of speech. I don't think most Oregonians believe that a $70,000 or $80,000 contribution to a legislative candidate is what the framers had in mind. In fact, I think you could make the argument that those kind of contributions drown out the voices of ordinary Oregonians. So this is really an equity issue. Everyone should have equal access to the democratic process. It should not be determined by who contributes the most. House Bill 2654 is the legislation that sets those limits and the reform that Oregon so desperately needs. And of course, as you know, House Bill 2653 sets the election date, hopefully, before this next campaign cycle begins. Among the policy choices you have to finalize here is how much of the reform should be placed inside the Constitution or in the statutes. And frankly, I prefer to put as little in the Constitution as possible, but there are some good arguments for placing restrictions in the Constitution itself. There are some other policy considerations, such as an amendment that we have attached and added to this legislation that deals with small donor PACs like the Right to Life and the League of Conservation Voters. This legislation will not solve all the problems we have in our campaign system, but it is a starting point. We still need to tighten reporting requirements and clean up our existing election laws. There are bills in the Capitol to address those problems. Our measures just establish some very basic limits similar to what the federal government and most other states have already had in the books for decades. Some people have told me the public doesn't care much about this or that this doesn't poll very well. The same thing was said about civil rights back in the 60s, but civil rights legislation was the right thing to do. This is the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Tim Finope, State Representative from House District 54. I want to focus on two things. One is the time has come, and the other is it's time to do the right thing. The time has come in that our campaign finance system is going to be different in 2 years or in 4 years, but likely within that time period. This is a bipartisan effort at real campaign finance reform, realistic sideboards to our unlimited system. The public believes in limits. In fact, we all know that $100 limits were passed by an overwhelming margin just a few years ago. Of course, later that was ruled unconstitutional, and that's why we're asking you to look at HGR 20, which would amend the free speech part of the Constitution to allow the people or the legislature to set limits. Oregon's unlimited campaign finance system is coming to an end. The question is, will the legislature lead that discussion and find a solution, or will another group impose their solution that will push campaign finance funding into the independent expenditure arena where candidates will lack the control of their campaigns and the message attached to them? It's likely that no one here has raised more money than I have in the last two cycles. In fact, I've raised about $450,000, which begs the question, why am I for campaign finance reform? I think it brings credibility to this issue that someone who's raised that kind of money would say that it's time for limits. The reason I think it's time for limits is because I don't believe any one person needs to have a $100,000 contribution to their campaign, a $50,000 contribution to their campaign, or even a $25,000 contribution to their campaign to make sure that they're heard. In fact, I never had a contribution that was more than, in aggregate, $22,000, and I could have still won both my races with limits that were based on what we're proposing. And you can all run your campaigns on limits that are basically like the federal level, somewhere in between what some states have and what the federal level is. And I would encourage you to look at this as a starting point and work with those who are interested in this issue to come up with a reasonable consensus. If you fail to act, the public will pass one of the other measures that will ultimately be on the 2002 ballot by probably folks who will come after us to testify. And I would encourage you to do the right thing and lead the way on real campaign finance reform. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions with Representative Hess.
Thank you. Do they have questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next up, Senators Courtney and Duncan. Welcome.
Chair Wilson and members of the House Rules, Redistricting, and Public Affairs Committee. My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator from District 17, which is the Salem-Keizer area. I want to thank the representatives, Hass, as well as Knoll, for allowing me to join on in on this movement, because when I first ran for Salem City Council in 1974, I remember I took $600 out of my little savings account. I didn't know much, and I thought that was a lot of money. Probably there's no one in this room who has raised more money for campaigns than I have. Now, I'm not sure of that. It's somewhere between $1.5 and $2 million total, because you see, not only have I run every year since BC, but more importantly, I led it the thank you, Representative Devlin, for your body language. I also was the leader of the House Democrats for the 92, 94, and the 96 campaign. So when you consider all that activity, that's all I do is see dollar signs. Even when I think I'm going to be on the embalming table, that's all I'm going to see, because all I did after a while was recruit, not candidates, was recruit money, money, money. And that particularly became true in the 90s. I noticed it more in the 90s than the 80s, the 70s. And it's becoming obvious to me that this is a situation that does affect the credibility of this institution. I really believe it's that important. I just really want to thank this committee, because as far as I know, this is the first committee this session to take up this very difficult task. And I think the fact that you had three state senators over here on your side willing to testify on this measure, and as I testify, you have a Senate committee in recess, because the three of us are on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and John Menace has gone into recess, not adjournment, not just allowing us to leave, but recess until we get back so that the three of us can testify in support of this. As a lawyer, I do think you're going to need a constitutional amendment. That's part of this package. You are going to need some kind of implementing legislation. That's part of this package. I think Representative Knope speaks very well that here it comes again, legislators, here it comes again. If we don't do it, the initiative process will do it, and it'll keep doing it. And that's what hurts our credibility perhaps more than anything else. Either we step up and try until we get it right, or it won't work. Now, I agree with you that there's always a chance, and I think the good Representative Dole, who's also an attorney, would agree with this, there's always a chance that the Supremes will overrule us in some way or other, but we've got to continually go back and go back and go back until we try to get this thing right. We've got to put some brakes on this. And this is an attempt, this package is an attempt to put some brakes on it, to put some reasonable limitations on it. It's not denying freedom of speech. It's not saying there can't be contributions. It's not saying where they can and can't come from, but it's putting some limits on it. One last thing. The best year I ever experienced as an elected official in terms of being the leader of the House caucus or as a candidate was 1996, and you all know why. Because at that time, the Supreme Court threw it out, there was a limitation. It was good for the lobby, it was good for candidates, it was good for caucus leaders, and it was good for this institution. Oh, yes, it was. We spent more time discussing issues. It allowed candidates more time to go door to door. It allowed more time for debates among candidates as well as caucuses. And we did not live and die for the almighty dollar in 1996. Unfortunately, it was very short-lived. I can speak with the history on this. Believe me, it was a great time to be involved in a political season. There was more to life than just the almighty dollar. So I'm really thankful to Representative Hanson. I'm really thankful to Representative Knope for putting this package together, and I'm honored that they would even allow me to sign on. And I'm very grateful to you, Mr. Chair, and members of this committee, that you'd even allow me to come here today and speak on it.
Thank you, Senator Gordon.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for giving us this time. And I will be brief, because we realize that the entire judicial system of the state of Oregon may be in abeyance while the three of us are right here, and we do need to get back and get it straightened out. But I'm pleased to join onto this bill. It's an interesting thing. Oregon politics are very, very clean. I think people who have looked at the political world around the country realize that there are a lot of bad things in politics, but those are not true in the state of Oregon. But I think that and it would be the rare person in this legislative assembly, and I've known most of them for the last 30, 40 years, that would abuse that. But the appearance of impropriety of being bought is certainly there. And I don't think that's the kind of message we want to send to our constituents. As I take a campaign contribution, I have told people many times, I may not even vote for your issue. And I think I would feel very comfortable in saying that. I just don't think we need a lot of money. And so I guess I really am very supportive. I think the senator said it very well. And I concur with my colleagues in the House. This is a measure that its time has come again.
and we need to be, move forward, and we need to take the responsibility before someone else does.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 14. Appreciate the opportunity to make a few comments today. I'm here in strong support of HJR 20 as well as HJR 34, which is principally sponsored by Representative Schrader. I think the if you look at Representative Hass's bill and Mr. Schrader's and others who are on the bills and those who will be presenting to you and some of you as well, I think can only validate some of the comments that have been made today. I think the very integrity of our election system is at stake. I think confidence in us as elected officials is at stake. This is not an easy fix. Having worked on a number of these bills myself in the interim and deciding at the end not to drop them because of the very confusing issues constitutionally, it should not still dissuade us from looking at the issue. There will be others who will testify following, but the United States Supreme Court 18 months ago in a case involving the state of Missouri made it very clear that states can set limitations on contributions. And the state of Oregon, because of Article 1, Section 9, we are going to have to make an amendment to that Constitution in order to make that provision. But certainly under the federal Constitution, that is allowable, so long as those are reasonable. I think we need to look at what is reasonable and make sure that we have confidence in our own system. In 1994, the voters spoke very, very clearly that they would like to have contribution limits in the state of Oregon. It was found unconstitutional, not because of the United States Constitution, but because of the Oregon Constitution limited that as free speech. This bill, supported by Representative Hass and the memory and the number of people here today and throughout this building, opens up that ability for, once again, the voters, should they so choose, to make those limitations. You heard from Representative Knope about the enormous amount of money that it takes to run these elections, primarily because you want to make sure you're competitive. I know when I ran for the Oregon Senate for the first time 2 years ago, my race cost over $600,000 collectively that we raised at that time had set a record, which was exploded, as you know, in Washington County for the state Senate just this last time around. I think it takes it sends the wrong message. No one wants to be uncompetitive, however, and as a result, we continue to escalate. It's an arms race of electioneering in terms of trying to find dollars to represent the citizens of the state. I would ask for your strong support and certainly look at the elements of these bills before you, but above all, giving the citizens of this state an opportunity to say and to validate, I think, which they will do, their strong vote of 1994, that they would like us to set some type of limitations on our activities in seeking office to represent them here in the Oregon legislature. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have a question.
Mr. Chair. I think I failed to introduce myself for the record. Your assistant may want that. I'm Vern Duncan, State Senator from District Number 12.
Vern, who he was. He's sitting there.
Thank you for your questions.
Senators, and I don't care which one of you wish to respond, if not all three, how did you determine the limits that you have come up with in these bills?
I expect no. Stop me if I'm wrong, but I suspect to answer that question, we would want to get Representatives Knope and Hass. Yes.
We would be much better.
Okay, very good. Thank you. For the questions.
I'd just say arbitrarily to pick them out.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
I mean, if you want to know,
we were going to write it down.
There's nothing academic or intellectual about this committee. Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. HB 2653 has looks like a cost of just over $1.7 million to have this special election. Can you give me your thoughts on how you see this special election as a funding priority over some of the other funding priorities we're needing to deal with this session?
Well, I can't speak to that particular bill because I was speaking of 34, which is the next general election. I think it would be reasonable for the committee on any of these bills or any combination that you might decide to send out to take that as an important consideration as when they might be voted upon. Mm-hmm. I know that they all have different. I noticed that they all have different time frames on them. I was speaking specifically to those that would be voted on at the next general election, but I think that would be part of your consideration and would be a valuable one in making that decision.
with you for the questions. All right, gentlemen, thank you, and as you would, thank your chair very much for doing what he did today to allow you here. Thank you. I'd like Representatives Kurt Schrader, Carolyn Tomei, and Representative Beck, please. Would like to remind you that we are working on two bills right now, and that's House Bill 2653 and H.J.R. 20. We've not yet opened hearings in 2654. Welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Carolyn Tomei, representative from House District 25, Milwaukee area. Thank you for allowing me to appear here today. I just am coming to speak in support of House Bill 2653 and the joint H.J.R. 20. I wholeheartedly support the good representatives from Bend and Beaverton and their attempt to help curb the influence of money in Oregon's political system. We've been elected to represent our constituents, and I think we need to be, as public servants, above reproach, like Caesar's wife. I think very often we say, no matter how much money is contributed by whom, that is not going to influence my decision. But in the public's eye, I think that can't help but influence how they see us. And at a time when politicians are being criticized, this is a time when we must show that we are honest, we're above reproach, and that we're not going to accept huge sums of money from special interest groups. After I was elected and before I took office, I was able to go to a meeting in Washington, D.C. for female newly elected representatives. And while I was there, we were discussing our campaigns, and people said I had to get so many contributions. I had to work so hard. I got almost $20,000. And another person said, oh, 20. I had to raise almost 25. They were appalled when I told them, first time out, that I had to raise over $120,000 and that there were some campaigns in this election where people raised over $1 million. We are unique, I think. At least we were unique in that group, although not every state was represented there. But I think we need to look. Right now, Oregon is an honest place. I think we are not overly influenced. But we need to look at what follows the money and the appearance that it gives to the public. So I'm urging you to please vote on House Bill 2653 and H.J.R. 20. And thank you for allowing me to appear today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kurt Schrader, State Representative, House District 23. I'd like to just make a couple of statements here to kind of to put this in perspective, if you will. I think it's very important. In 1976, in the Buckley-Vallejo decision, the Supreme Court upheld $1,000 as the maximum limit that individuals could contribute to a federal candidate's campaign. $1,000. Here in the state of Oregon, there is no limit for a state representative or state senator race. There's something wrong there, something very seriously wrong, when at the federal level there's that $1,000 limit and there's nothing at all here in the state of Oregon. We are, to follow up on what Representative Tomei was saying, we're one of only 16 states in the United States that has no contribution limits. No campaign finance limits, if you will. One of 16 states. That's not a group I'd like our state to continue to be a member of. I'd also point out that I think the timing is good for us to start to look at campaign finance again, in that the decision last year, January 24th of 2000, in the Missouri Shrink case, upheld those federal limits and indeed broadened the opportunity for states to look at individual limits that either prevented corruption or, in the case of Oregon's system, the appearance of corruption. That we have this opportunity to deal with this issue and deal with it now. I'd also frankly point to this particular legislature. This has been the best legislative session I've served in so far. The spirit of bipartisanship and the interest in this issue is outstanding. We could not have addressed this issue in either of the previous two legislatures that I serve with. This is an opportunity that I hope we do not let pass. I've also introduced a couple of campaign finance bills that hopefully the committee will hear at some point in time with bipartisan support, ones with Representative Williams and the others with a number of House and Senate representatives and senators that does another attempt at limits. And unlike the good senator from Salem, there are some rational reasons one sets these limits. One has to do, I think, with the existing spending patterns that we have here in the state of Oregon and relationship, if you will, to the remuneration from the office and the influence of these offices. And the other is based, quite frankly, directly off of some of these cases. If one looks at all the other cases here in the state of, in the United States and the limits that are currently in place, one can extrapolate, I think, some pretty reasonable campaign contribution limits that we should at least be looking at in this committee. Hopefully we'll have a full discussion as to whether or not these particular limits are appropriate for them. I guess the last thing I'd like to say is that I concur with the good senator from Salem. When I ran my first race prior to the contribution limits enacted in 94, both Representative Beck and I were privileged to get elected in 96, but in 94 I ran a race and it cost over $100,000. That very same race, next election cycle in 96, cost $40,000. I think it gives us an opportunity to bring the process back to the people. This is, contrary to what you'll hear in some of the media, this is a very popular topic. If you send out, I challenge every one of us here, send out a questionnaire to your citizens, to your constituents. I've done so. And one of the most popular topics, for us to address here this legislative session is campaign finance reform. This is supposed to be a participatory sport. Let's put it all on an equal footing, let everyone participate equally, if you will, and enact some campaign finance legislation. I'm a strong supporter of H.E.R. 20 and House Bill 2653.
Thank you, Representative Schrader. Representative Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will chime in to support this package of bills here today. I don't have a formal statement, but just I really feel there's no issue, with the possible exception of term limits revisions, no issue that would reform and improve how we do business and, more importantly, how we are received by the public in this era where I think the public has lost confidence in what we do. And I think this is one of the changes that's absolutely essential for us to make in the modern world, the technological world, the world where people aren't paying much attention to what we're doing. I think this change will be an important step toward improving the public's reception of the legislative process. I too want to chime in on my own experience. I see there are four of us in this room here who all campaigned under the 96 $100 limits. And my own experience was in a competitive primary where I raised contributions from over 500 people of $100 or less. Most of that was done just through mail solicitations, a few house coffees, but I was not spending all of my time trying to go have lunches with members of the lobby. In fact, I think I only received one check in the entire election from a political action committee. All my contributions, or all but that one, were from people. And I can't tell you how gratifying that was. I was able to focus on knocking on doors. I had enough money. I raised $34,000, something like that, and was able to, that was enough to let me run a modest mail campaign to get my name, get my message out there. And I am shocked, and when I watch candidates now under the current system spend so much of their time raising money and not able to focus on doorsteps and message and ideas, I think it's just nothing short of a tragedy. The other comment I have to make, sort of as I reflect on Measure 7, which the courts have just thrown out, or lower courts have determined are unconstitutional,
I'm amazed that the campaign finance measure was passed with, I believe, 75-76% in 1994, and the courts threw that out as unconstitutional in early 1997, and nary a word has been heard since. And the courts have thrown out Measure 7, and happily we are trying to, we've set up a committee explicitly to address that issue and try to glean what the voters were thinking and how to remedy whatever message was being sent. And I'm glad that, well, 6 years, 7 years after this measure was passed, that this committee is taking it up and taking an earnest effort to acknowledge what at least six, 7 years ago was a broadly popular issue, and I think remains so today. I appreciate your time and deliberation on this.
Thank you, Representative Beck. Any questions for this panel? Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And since at least Tivi brought this up, I thought I'd chime in on this as the campaign finance reform that was in force in 96. One of the problems that, obviously I wasn't a candidate at the time, but I was intimately involved in campaigns. One of the problems that I saw with that reform was that while we limited a candidate's ability to raise money, there were no limits on third parties, on independent PACs to raise unlimited amounts of money and spend them however they saw fit on a variety of races wherever they so chose, and whether or not they spent them as a candidate for you or against you, there was no connection between the candidate and those dollars, no accountability between the candidate and the public for those dollars, and there was a huge disconnect. I think we lost the ability to have accountability, whereas if I raise money now, sure, it's pretty much unlimited. If I raise money, I'm accountable personally for how that money is raised and spent. And does this measures do any way limit or address the issue of independent third parties?
If I may, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Schrader again, I don't believe these particular measures do. The proponents can speak a little bit more to the depth of that. But I will say I agree with Representative Starr. He's got an excellent point. And I think if you look at Washington State's campaign finance reform, where they worked on the limits for individuals, they ended up with soft money problems that just ballooned in Washington State. And I guess I'd urge this committee, as it gets its hands around this issue and the package of bills that are before you, I introduced, as I mentioned, two bills. And one of the bills that I put in dealt with this issue of independent expenditures to the extent that our Supreme Court and our Constitution allows us. And it talks about limiting express advocacy. We can't apparently limit independent expenditures for measures. But to the extent that these measures purport or start to go to express advocacy, I'd urge you to look at this particular piece of legislation that's been introduced to help control that blooming, if you will, of independent expenditures, which would make a mockery, if you will, of just the contribution limits. But you'll have an opportunity to review that, I think, as well, and would urge this group to address soft money, address the express advocacy expenditure area, as well as contribution limits.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, on that subject, I'm sure that the proponents of the bill have had a chance to actually discuss in the formation of their bill with the counsel for the committee, Mr. Ruttlinger. And even with the constitutional amendment, and I actually favor some version of campaign finance reform, but I think what Mr. Ruttlinger, and perhaps it would be good to bring him to the committee at some future meeting, has said that even with it, we can't limit expenditures, we can't limit self-funded campaigns, meaning somebody that can fund the campaign on their own. We can't limit independent expenditures by third parties. And there's even some question, unless we can show some clear tie to potential or perceived corruption, that we can even limit contributions during a legislative session. And that's not on the basis of the Oregon Constitution. I think that's on the basis of the U.S. Constitution. But what it does appear we can do is to limit the expenditures from individuals, interest groups, and corporations. And I think, you know, that for a well-written measure, that might be a pretty good first step, but it may be the only step we can take.
Just make one quick comment, sir, if I may. But disclosure, the independent expenditures, I think if you, again, I should have Mr. Ruttlinger back up here at some point in time, should you continue the discussion, when you continue the discussion, that you can do disclosure on those independent expenditures, and that may be a way that this group could work, the, again, first steps as Representative Devlin's suggesting.
Thank you. Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Chair. Kind of, I guess, following up on the question I had for the senators a little bit ago on 2653 is the one that sets the special statewide election for May 15, 2001. And Representative Hass's testimony says that, you know, the primary purpose seems to be it's to set the election date before the next campaign cycle begins. Do you see a benefit to spending $1.7 million on this I guess this kind of activity, a special election, so that I guess the candidates in the next cycle have the benefit of following under the same rule throughout the cycle, or does it make more sense to wait until maybe a general election where we don't have the same cost?
If I can add, I have a different perspective on why it would be good to place it on this spring's election. It's the same reason I think we should try to enact term limits revisions this election. In the modern era in which we live, the public often isn't following what goes on after we're out of session. There's less interest. We are all distracted. We aren't as focused on some of the ballot measures or that we refer to the ballot after session. The general elections now tend to be flooded with so many initiatives that whatever we refer kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And I think that in addition to the primary reason, which the sponsors have advocated for putting it on this spring, the added benefit is that this is when the public is going to be most focused on us and the business we do. We're being covered in our papers every day of the week. There are opinions about our business and editorials being written every, you know, few days. Occasionally, we're even on the evening news. People are somewhat engaged in our process during the legislature, and I would sort of see it as, in a sense, a referendum on the job we are doing and in this time and place. And so I think if there were any way to get this on the ballot this spring, we have a much better chance of being advocates for it and not getting distracted by all of our other life responsibilities in the off in the interim. And I think the public has a better chance of really paying attention to it. I think it's absolutely worth the expenditure of money. However, I understand we have until about March 15th to get anything on the ballot this May. So time, the clock is ticking.
Thank you. Any further?
I'll talk to Representative Westland.
Well, and I guess just as a follow-up to that, I'm just curious, you know, if you think that we have a responsibility to refer something out that has such a heavy price tag to it, given all the other priorities that seem to be for the dollars, given the current economic situation we're dealing with right now.
Good comment. All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go ahead and open a work session. We've got, a public hearing. Sorry to scare you. We've got a public hearing going on House Bill 2653 and H.J.R. 20. I'm also going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2654, and I will call back Representatives Hass and Knope.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. Mark Hass from House District 8. I just wanted to chime in on Representative Doyle's questions, and my thought was that if this is the only issue that goes before voters, then perhaps it's a pretty heavy price. But in four of the last four off years, there have been statewide elections, and there's a pretty good chance this year there will be some others. And so that's why, if there is one, I would want this one to be included. That's one consideration. The other one is a practical consideration in that if we do pass this legislation, then there will be legislators in the awkward position, if we don't vote on it until the next general election, of having supported a plan that calls for limits, yet running in an election in the next cycle in which there are no limits. And there would be some awkward situations in that you would look hypocritical.
Thank you. Further questions on that? All right, thank you. Since we're in the public hearing on 2654, we had the question before asked, and I think Representative Gerard had asked that, about the amounts that were actually chosen in 2654. I'd like to refer us to the sections in which that is mentioned, explain those sections and a little bit behind the amounts that were chosen, if you would.
Mr. Chairman, the reasoning was that the statewide limits of $1,000, those match the federal limits, which seemed to fit. There was some subjectivity here, granted, and the $500 and $1,000 per general election and per primary election for legislative races were set because that allows legislative candidates to raise a reasonable amount of money. And if you allow legislative candidates to raise a reasonable amount, then you can avoid the situation that Representative Starr alluded to, in that a third party in expenditures can come in and swamp your race. That is what happened in 1996 in a very few races. And if there was any problem at all with the 1996 measures, those limits were so low that you were literally tying your hands behind the backs of some candidates. If you allow legislators to raise enough money to hire a staff and do some mailings, frankly, most of my contributions in the last cycle were these limits or less, then it's less likely that independent expenditures, which are still legal today, would occur. So I think the trick here is to find the magic number that not too small, yet not so large that these don't have any effect.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of items. Representative Hass and actually Representative Knope. Before I listed some of the limitations that I thought that the measure had and some of the limitations we'd have to face actually with any measure, even with a constitutional change. And quite honestly, I think even with some of those limitations, there might still be benefits. And I was just wanting to get your comments. I was one of those candidates in 96. Some people might say, given who my opposition was one of the reasons why I think I received something in total of about 1,000 individual contributions during that campaign, and I think raised more than all but two members of the legislature. One was former Senator Shannon, the other was now Senator Roger Beyer. But at the same time as I did that, there were probably 50 to 60,000 of independent expenditures in that race. And that's already been commented on as a downside. And I'll give you another potential downside. And what I'm trying to hear from you is if you think it's even still worthwhile with all the downsides. I think it may be, even with all the downsides, to be honest. The other downside is you can't place a limitation on self-funded campaigns. My last election, primary and general, I spent about $218,000. My opposition spent about $236,000. Out of that $218,000, I think about $60 was my own. My opposition, $200,000 was their own money. And this will place no limitations on that. Even with all of those limitations on what you realistically can do, do you think it's still worthwhile to do this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I believe that it is. And I would encourage this committee to look at the limits. And there's a lot of wisdom, I think, on the committee here. You've all been through some tough campaigns, it looks like, most of you anyway. maybe some were in the primary, but most of you have been through a tough campaign or two. And I think if you set the limits within reason, and what I would try to get at is that as you set the limits, that no one single individual or PAC would be contributing more than 1 to 5% of someone's total. For instance, you could take the Q-Tub Deckert race, and if you wanted to apply the 1% solution to that, it would be about $5,000 per candidate per side. And my suggestion is from here on out, we need, as campaign expenditures continue to increase at rates of 30 or 40, 50% per cycle, that we run into the essentially the escalation. I'm not asking you to send us back to the dark ages where we can't afford to pay for our own campaigns, and it does push it outside of your control. Because I think that 96 election cycle was very difficult for people who were trying to run to control their message and what they wanted to say because others were saying it for them. And I don't want to go back to that era, but what I do want to do is set reasonable limits by which you can raise money and get your message out, but still nobody is contributing, you know, $40,000 or $50,000 to these races because these races can be run without that happening.
Thank you for the questions. Representative Verger, then Representative Walker.
Maybe I need to have it explained to me just a little bit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you limit the contributions that people can make to me, and I'm a candidate, how do I prevent a person from putting up a billboard, running ads in the paper? They've not given me any money, but they are just simply doing what we were talking about that happened in 96. Is that supposed to be a part of this, that we limit any activity that can be done for the candidate outside of that contribution?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Verger, first of all that is totally legal under our current system. This legislation deals with in-kind contributions, and what you're talking about under third-party expenditures, as we commented before, that can still happen. Will it happen in the future with limits or not? Probably, but if we give candidates enough room to run their own campaigns, it will be less of a factor. Third-party expenditures occur in the federal system that have some very basic limits. Do they overwhelm the system? I don't think so, but they still occur.
I'll follow up, Mr. Campaigner, the candidate, loses control, though, and so I just don't quite understand what can the candidate do themselves to limit any control of this third party. There was a lot of money, as you know, that came in from out of the state in the campaigns in Oregon also, and some of that was handled through third party. How do we handle that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I think the best way to handle that is through reporting. Currently, to my knowledge, the independent expenditure folks have to file reports, but I think it's maybe one or two times. And I think the reporting aspect of that is the key, and moving those timetables up to see who is doing what to whom, and I think that gives the candidate a better idea themselves of who's spending money in their race. And I think if you set the limits at reasonable limits and don't go too low to restrict the flow of money into campaigns, I think you'll see little of that happening. We saw it maybe in four or five races where there was big dollars spent that was i.e. independent expenditure. And, you know, I had, I think, two or three people take out little ads or something in my race that I didn't know about it, and I guess they would be considered an independent expenditure. But I think in most races, that kind of stuff doesn't happen to a large degree unless you're a targeted race, and it may happen. But I don't know that you can actually get a constitutional control on that aspect of it.
Thank you.
Representative Walker.
Yes, I think that we often get in this discussion and get sidetracked as to how much did any of these races cost. You know, people see the numbers reported in the paper and television that, you know, so-and-so's race cost X number of dollars, and people immediately translate that to somebody's had undue influence, perhaps. I think we need to focus in House Bill 2654, we're talking about the amount of contributions from parties to other parties. Independent expenditures really aren't a consideration under this bill. And we're talking about the escalation of contributions. And if you have a contribution, if you raise $150,000 for a campaign, and 25% of that came from a single contributor, I think the public interprets that to mean there's undue influence. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I didn't have that happen. But I will say my race was not a cheap race, but certainly didn't cost some of my colleagues did here. But I'll say the numbers I see here are very realistic. I think I only had one contribution equal to the $5,000 and one contribution in excess of that. and yet in my primary and general race, I probably raised $125,000. So it came from mostly smaller contributors, less than these amounts. So, you know, the number of contributors, there's no influence, I believe, when you're talking about large numbers of contributors, when it contributes to an aggregate of amount that you raise. It doesn't stop you from raising the amount that you need to run your race. It just limits who you can get that from. And certainly, these, I think, are very generous numbers in regards to where you can collect that money or how much you can collect. And I think we just need to really narrow our focus on not how much a campaign costs, but how much are we collecting from an individual or a group of individuals in an aggregate. That's the only comment I had on it.
Mr. Chair, might I comment on that? I actually have an article I'd be happy to pass out to the committee, but when we introduce these... A reporter from my area who's still sitting in the front row decided that he would go through my CNEs and check to see how much I could have raised this last cycle under these limits. And I collected roughly $165,000, both primary and general, and it would have meant that I would have collected $28,000 less than I did in this last cycle. So I could have probably squeaked by running my campaign with $28,000 less. And I was probably, I don't know, probably in the top 10 of House candidates who raised funds or thereabouts. So what you're really looking at is giving people the ability to still run their campaigns, but setting reasonable sideboards. And I'll be happy to pass that article out for your amusement.
Thank you, Representative Girard.
Tim, if the intent of campaign reform is to limit the amount of money spent. Instead of regulating individual contributions, and I think this maybe addresses the question that Representative Devlin brought up, why not just establish an overall cap on spending?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, you know, that's an interesting idea, but one of the things I think that would do, besides the fact that I don't know that we know for sure that that's constitutional, and I don't think it is. But in a district like mine that has gone a decade of significant growth, I have about 44,000 registered people in my district. And if you were to put a cap on, you know, say cap them at $100,000 per race, maybe your district or Representative Butler's, who may have 25,000 registered voters in them, I'm at a distinct disadvantage because every time I do a mail piece or do some sort of a voter contact, I'm going to have to contact a whole lot more people than someone else. So I would feel that under caps that I would be at a significant disadvantage. Now, of course, we're going to redistrict, so everybody's going to be even now for at least the next 2 to 4 years probably, although I guess my district will probably grow pretty significantly again. But that's the reason I would be concerned about caps.
Mr. Chair. Legislative Council have said that any kind of caps would run afoul of the state and federal constitutions.
Thank you, and I will have Legislative Council up next. Representative March?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In one of the provisions of HJR 20 is allowing us to do a prohibition on accepting money during session. Is there a companion bill to do that, in as much as I would like to see money not raised during session?
Well, all of the implementing language is in House Bill 2654 for the limits. But let me just say one thing about the ban. I certainly am not a lawyer, but we have a legal opinion from Legislative Council here that I think Chairman Wilson has, in that it has similar bans across the country have found to be unconstitutional when they try to ban contributions. However, and you will hear more about this, recent court cases have found those to be constitutional if they are found to prevent corruption or the potential for corruption. So I am very optimistic that that is a trend that we're seeing in this area that will hold up, and it was part of my goal and Ted Rutlander's goal to write that part very narrow way so that it could be construed in that vein.
Mr. Chair, if I just make comment, I think that's one of the critical elements of this, and I think it's one of the reasons it needs to go forward. Our system, I think, has been good in that we don't have to be concerned about raising money during session. I'd hate to see that end, even though it's maybe legal now. I think over time, if we don't do something to try to give the people an opportunity to reinstate that ban, that at some date in the future, people are going to begin to take contributions and open the door for that. And I just even though it happens in other states, and we haven't had it here, I don't think it's something we need to bring here. I think most of us would agree that that it would be reasonable. We've operated under that system for a long time now. And so I would say that's one of the critical elements of this.
Thank you for the questions. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to have Greg Chamon, Legislative Counsel, appear before us, please. I guess what we would like to do as a committee is run these bills through the legislative body shop here for a few moments and see where the dents are and see what we have to do. Councilor Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Our advice to you is that House Joint Resolution new subsection 2B, that's at lines 13 to 15 of the bill, and in House Bill 2654, sections 6 and 7, would be found by a court more likely than not to violate the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. The Oregon Constitution, as interpreted by our Supreme Court, provides a fairly bright-line test for how you evaluate limits on a person's speech. The U.S. Supreme Court's analysis of the First Amendment is somewhat murkier. You end up applying what I refer to as the Goldilocks test. You stick your finger into each of the bowls until you figure out which one you think is right. In our situation, we think that subsection 2B and the resolution and sections 6 and 7 would more likely than not be found to be too warm. You simply don't, under the U.S. Constitution, have the authority to limit speech for that significant duration of time.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, this is a question not on the same section that the General Counsel has brought forward, but would there be any constitutional problem with the modification in the bill that would that would in effect remove the limits on contributions if an opposing candidate is self-funded beyond a certain level, or if they, or if there are independent expenditures above a certain level? Would that meet a constitutional test?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, if I understand your question correctly, as to an opponent's expenditures, probably that would be all right. As to an independent expenditure, probably not.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, follow up?
Follow up.
I know this is a roundabout, but we're going back to the original question now. The issue of limiting during session, and I think the statement that Mr. Haas made and the statement that, that I made are similar, and they both came from, I think, Mr. Ruttlinger. For there to be any possibility of the limitation during a session to meet a constitutional test, we'd have to show some relationship to potential corruption, actual corruption.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, potential.
Potential.
Thank you, Representative March.
Thank you. Mr. Chamoff, you're saying that under H.J.R. 20, Section 182A, 2B, could be considered unconstitutional? Is it the granting of the power to the legislature that is unconstitutional, or the exercise of that power of the legislature by enacting a prohibition that would be, if we, in other words, it's the prohibition you're saying is, would be unconstitutional, not the granting of the power to the legislature to do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, I think in addition to finding an actual prohibition to be unconstitutional, a court would also find an authorization to do something unconstitutional to be unconstitutional.
Follow up? Thank you. Representative Berger.
I have a question. If a person giving money is an expression of speech, what would be the difference if the cap was on the on the amount of money that a person can raise during a campaign? For instance, let's say $100,000 was the cap, and I could raise my own money, or I could get one person to give me that, as long as I didn't go over $100,000. Would that be different?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you. Beyond these small issues, are there any other problems with these bills?
Mr. Chair, no.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Next up, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State. Welcome, Mr. McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State. It's a pleasure to be before the committee again to talk today about campaign finance reform. Across the nation, the level of cynicism among the electorate continues to rise as people feel more and more disconnected from their government and elected officials. One of the major causes of this cynicism is the growing belief that elected officials work for those who finance their campaigns, not the general citizenry. We believe very strongly in the need for significant reform of the way we finance campaigns. We believe very strongly that contribution limits are an element of true campaign finance reform. As a nation and as a state, we have to come to terms with the fact that there is too much money in our political system and that candidates have to spend too much time raising money to be competitive. There are two critical elements to campaign finance reform. We believe we should have publicly financed campaigns. Publicly financed campaigns provide a set amount of public funds to run for office to qualifying candidates who agree to limit their spending and reject contributions from private sources. This proposal failed in Oregon last fall. However, versions of it have passed already in Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, and Vermont. I will not recite all the arguments made in favor of Measure 6, except to point out that contributions alone are not effective restraints on increases in costs of campaigns. One need only look at the cost of campaigns for Congress. Contributions from individuals have been capped at $1,000 since 1974, yet the costs of campaigns have spiraled at a dizzying rate. Contributions must be linked to expenditure limits to be effective. The only constitutional way to accomplish expenditure limits is through public financing. Public financing must be a long-term goal if we are to fully deal with campaign finance reform. Based upon the results of Measure 6, it is clear that the public is not currently ready for that step. There is a significant step that we can take today. HDR 20 and House Bill 2654 will be a step in the right direction towards limitation of campaign cash. Politicians should be beholden to their constituents rather than the moneyed interests who write the checks to finance their campaigns. House Bill 2654 establishes workable limits on donations to legislative and statewide candidates. The advantages to these limits
the advantage to these limits is not theoretical. The only election cycle in Oregon history, the 1996 primary and general elections, that had limits in place is the only time when both fundraising and expenditures dipped, even when you include independent expenditures. Fundraising and campaign spending dropped, but returned to previous levels when the courts ruled against these limits. While House Bill 2654 might not be the total solution to Oregon's political funding excesses, it is a much-needed first step. The bill will establish a constitutional means to curb out-of-control fundraising while reforming campaign practices and beginning the process of full reform. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McGuire? Thank you very much. Next up, Janice Thompson, please. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Janice Thompson. I'm the director of an organization called the Money in Politics Research Action Project, which is a nonprofit organization here in Oregon. Our underlying goals are to increase accountability and public participation in politics. And we rely quite a bit on the various disclosure of contributions and use that research to take a look at different campaign finance reform proposals. And so what I want to do today is just really take a look at what we can learn both from taking a look at the 2000 elections and at least a preliminary draft look that I've been able to do on how the limits specified in House Bill 2654 would have affected the 2000 elections, how those elections would look different, as well as take a look at the 96 elections and just some of the data that you know we can learn from what happened in that election under those contribution limits. So at the bottom of the first page, then, you can see that the major result of the 96 elections was, as has been stated, you know, quite a significant reduction in campaign costs. It has also been discussed record-setting levels of independent expenditures. And overall, then, the reduction for the legislative elections compared to the 1994 levels was 68%. When you add in the amount of money spent on independent expenditures, that reduction goes down to 44%. But that's still a significant decline. And, you know, as other people have stated, there's any number of problems with the fact that, you know, these contribution amounts continue to go up. So, you know, contribution limits do achieve the goal of at least ratcheting down the increase in cost of elections. To echo the comments of Patty McGuire, however, it's also helpful to look at the 96 elections in terms of some reform goals that are not met, particularly regarding voter choice. And I included some data there from Maine and Arizona, whose 2000 elections occurred under the public funding system that those states adopted, just as a point of contrast. It doesn't look like, again, based on the 96 data, that there's a significant change in the number of uncontested primaries, that the playing field is significantly leveled between winners and losers based on look at the disparities in fundraising success. There was no particular increase in the diversity of candidates in 96, and incumbent advantage didn't seem to be affected. There are some really significant changes in Maine and Arizona, particularly with regards to uncontested primaries under the public funding system. The whole question of more voter contact during campaigns is kind of a more of an open question. There have been comments earlier from folks saying they really liked the 96 election and it, you know, really forced them to talk to more people and not focus so much on fundraising. Others I've heard, particularly campaign manager types, seem to feel like, you know, the 96 elections were much more of a hassle. So that's more of an open question. I did include there, just as a point of contrast again, some quotes from candidates running in Arizona for whom the whole question of having to fundraise during the campaign election cycle was off the table. And they liked it. You know, recognizing, of course, that public funding is not really at the table now, I just do want to point out, however, that contribution limits and public funding campaign finance reform are not mutually exclusive reforms. In all the states that have adopted public funding reform, there were already contribution limits in place. So it seems that contribution limits are only one step required for comprehensive reform. So I say that just to kind of put this discussion into a certain kind of context in terms of, you know, what limits will do, you know, some really, you know, important, valuable steps, but also what they won't do. Some specific topics with regards to learning from the 96 elections, as has already been discussed, the level of independent expenditures did go up very significantly in those elections, and the Measure 9 reform did include language to require 24-hour disclosure of the obligation of independent expenditure funds within 24 hours. That it was set at a $10,000 threshold. The Secretary of State's office, after those elections, indicated that, you know, that threshold did not catch a significant, you know, about a third of the independent expenditures. So I think, you know, my understanding is that there's already various discussions about an amendment to these provisions to increase the disclosure of independent expenditures. As has been stated, you can't, you know, eliminate them. You can't ban them. And I just tossed out a possible recommendation, which is to set that 24-hour reporting threshold at $5,000 for statewide races and $1,000 for legislative races, just as a point of start the discussion. Another thing that was revealed in the analysis of the 96 election is something, again, that's perfectly legal and you can't ban it, but maybe you could increase some disclosure, which concerns the bundling of contributions. That's when you group contributions from one set of donors, so they all arrive kind of in the candidate's, you know, mailbox the same day or the, you know, within a couple of day period of time, just to kind of, you know, remind the candidate that this, that particular interest group, you know, is working together. This was documented in the 96 election, and it was viewed as a technique to overcome the leveling effects of the contribution limits. The Federal Election Commission has some disclosure requirements that pertain to bundling. The federal terminology used is conduits and intermediaries, and I give the citation there in FEC rules. And again, just kind of toss out the idea that taking a look in 2654 of similarly learning from the 96 election and seeing what happened under contribution limits, and again, you know, trying to just make sure there's adequate disclosure.
I may interrupt just for
a minute. Oh, sure. Sorry.
The proponents of the bill have, as you know, put some limits in statute with the idea of striking a balance of some kind here. What's your comments on the amount that they have chosen in relationship to striking that balance?
Well, I actually, the page 5 and 6 kind of deal more with, you know, how the 2000 elections would have been influenced. And I just got the database from the national partner that I work with, the National Institute on Money and State Politics, literally last Thursday to do this. And so all the discussion on page 5 and 6 is, you know, very much kind of a draft. I haven't had a chance to double-check it and whatnot. But, and it's based on this analysis that, quite frankly, I'm going to, you know, try to think that through. And at this point, I understand the rationale that's been described by the various folks who have proposed those limits. There certainly is a need to strike a balance, again, kind of related to the independent expenditure, but I'm not quite there yet in saying what I think about it.
We'll certainly have this back. And
yeah, so as I, yeah, you know, get nailed down some of these trends, any other questions, or should I?
I would give you a couple of minutes to sum up if you'd like.
Right. I also add that regard, there was in 96 elections some advertising that was anonymous, was not considered an independent expenditure, and therefore was not disclosed. And this is, you know, sometimes referred to as issue ads, and there was a complaint about this and some subsequent broadening of independent expenditure language in Oregon Court of Appeals case. So that, again, when there's, you know, taking a look at the whole issue of independent expenditures and disclosure, discussions with the Secretary of State's office regarding Crumpton and Keesling seems like it might make sense. Another suggestion, again, that's based on the data, which is amendment has already been referred to, is distinguish between small donor and large donor PACs, and there's some information given on page 4 to kind of help substantiate part of the rationale for that. It's already been noted, there's been discussion related to the ban on legislative session fundraising, and the only thing I wanted to add to that discussion is, parallel to this discussion, there's various proposals out there about moving to annual sessions. And I think, you know, putting some in the Constitution, some banning legislative session contributions should be kind of looked at in terms of, like, what, how would that play out if there was indeed a shift to annual sessions. So I just want to toss that out. And then finally, the trends certainly are that election costs would dramatically decline, and some preliminary figures are given. The other thing that would happen kind of is, it makes sense, but, you know, it's kind of always nice when the data kind of confirms your hunches about these things, is that the importance of contributions from individuals would become more significant with limits as compared to political committees. And but it's also been noted when you have limits, since it is unconstitutional to ban somebody's own personal use of funds in their campaign, you also saw with limits in the last election, if you the potential for self-financing being, you know, more of a factor. So that's it.
I would ask about the perceived danger of this becoming the playground for the rich, the wealthy, and so forth.
If you take a look at the figures, for example, in the House primary, there were roughly 10% of total contributions from a family category, which is overstating the self-financing, and I kind of explained the caveats with the data there. But with limits, that would have increased to 22% of the funds in the overall House primaries being, you know, from family members, and therefore a chunk of that being self-financing.
Representative Devlin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I just might comment on the issue of annual sessions. Prior to the Attorney General's opinion about constitutionality of receiving contributions during sessions, between, I think, the 97 and the 99 session, we had the potential of a special session. And actually, I think most of us at that time received notice that should there be a special session,
mm-hmm.
that we would be under the same limitations. So it's nothing unusual. That's practice.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next up will be David Buchanan and Jen Hoffman, Common Cosby.
Chairman Wilson, members of the committee, I'm David Buchanan, Executive Director for Oregon Common Cause. I'd like to introduce you to Genevieve Hoffman. She's the state chair of Oregon Common Cause. She's also a former member of the National Common Cause Governing Board. Jen.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Genevieve Hoffman. I have been active with Common Cause for over 25 years, and during that time, campaign finance reform has been the primary concern of our organization. In 1973, legislation was passed by the Oregon legislature that replaced our existing contribution limits with expenditure limits instead. After the 1974 elections, the legislation was held to be unconstitutional by our state Supreme Court. Oregon thus had no limits on either contributions or expenditures. Over the years, the cost of campaigns and the size of contributions have grown enormously. The need for reform, which was apparent in the 70s, has long since become an absolute necessity. Common Cause worked with many other groups to place ballot measure 9 before the voters in 1994. It was overwhelmingly passed by a 72% yes vote. That yes vote was Oregonians' response to the growing awareness that huge contributions from special interests are destroying an essential element of democracy, which promises fairness and equality in the electoral process. Measure 9 was the same kind of statutory enactment as HB 2654, which is before you today. Measure 9 and HB 2654 were designed to meet the constitutional requirements defined by the United States Supreme Court in Buckley versus Vallejo and subsequent decisions. After the 1996 election proved the merits and viability of Measure 9, our state Supreme Court held that our state constitution was more restrictive than the federal constitution on the subject of campaign financing and overturned the important provisions of that measure. It is now apparent that we need to make a change in the state constitution to bring about the reform that is so badly needed. H.J.R. 20 would bring about that necessary change. We therefore support and urge passage of the package of bills before you today. In Oregon, where our tradition has so strongly supported the idea of a citizen legislature, it's ironic that we have not been able to bring about the election reform that will restore the balance of power to the average voter. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. And if you have any questions, David and I will be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
The last individual I have on my sign-up sheet here today is David Pedanke, ACLU Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, David Pedanke, Executive Director, American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, here today to testify in opposition to H.J.R. 20 and House Bill 2654. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to start by going back a bit in time. Some of the constitutional issues have been discussed here, and I know some of you are more familiar with those issues than others. So as the previous witness from Common Cause testified, campaign finance reform began in the mid-70s with legislation both at the national level from Congress and here in Oregon from the legislature, limiting both contributions and expenditures in candidate campaigns. Almost immediately, those limitations were challenged on constitutional grounds under both the, at the federal level, under the federal constitution, under the First Amendment. And here in Oregon, under the Oregon Bill of Rights, as well as the federal constitution, and the Oregon Bill of Rights provision that is relevant is Article 1, Section 8, which is the Oregon Free Expression provision. At the federal level, the U.S. Supreme Court, in the case of Buckley versus Vallejo, determined that spending limits were unconstitutional under the federal First Amendment. And I think it was a given at that time and has been in many of the years since that the proponents of campaign finance reform have always seen as the Holy Grail expenditure limits. And there remain a number of proposals in Congress to amend the U.S. Constitution to weaken the federal First Amendment in order to permit expenditure limits and overturn the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Buckley versus Vallejo. The U.S. Supreme Court then went on to deal with some of the side issues before they got to the issue of contribution limits, and held that candidates themselves could not be restricted in how much they spent on their own campaigns. And independent third, independent expenditures by individuals or organizations could not be limited under the First Amendment. They then looked at the issue of contribution limits on candidates under the federal Constitution and held that because in order to prevent the appearance of impropriety, it's important to remember that, they didn't say that there was impropriety. They didn't say that candidates were, in effect, taking bribes by accepting campaign contributions. But they said that in order to avoid the appearance of impropriety, Congress did have the power to put reasonable limits on campaign contributions. Now, here in Oregon, a case was going forward actually on a slightly faster track, and that was the case of Darris versus Myers. Some of you may be familiar with Warren Darris, who was a Republican candidate for the legislature in the 1976 cycle, I believe it was. It must have been the 1974 cycle. Under the Oregon Constitution, the Oregon Supreme Court looked at the Oregon Bill of Rights first before reaching any federal constitutional issues. Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution provides, and I may not have this exactly right, no law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right. The court held, the Oregon Supreme Court held, that that provision prohibited both limits on expenditures and limits on contributions. Although they didn't quite, the portion of the decision at that time on contribution limits was, in the view of many people, not necessary for the court's final decision in the case. In legal terms, many consider that part of the opinion dicta, because the court, in throwing out the expenditure limits, found that the rest of the statute couldn't hold up on its own, and so they struck down the whole statute. Fast forward to 1994 and the passage of contribution limits subsequent to ballot measure, the ballot measure put forward by Common Cause and Legal Women's Voters in that year. And that was then subject to another constitutional challenge, in case brought by Fred Van Atta, who I think many of you know as a lobbyist in this building. In that case, the Oregon Supreme Court settled, I think, very conclusively the issue under the Oregon Constitution with regard to contribution limits, and did find that contributions in political campaigns are an expression of support from a contributor for the candidate to whom that contribution is given, and therefore contributions are a form of expression. And because of the very express limitation in the Oregon Bill of Rights, such limits were unconstitutional under the Oregon Constitution. So here we are today. Again, folks are coming to you, your colleagues and others are coming to you, saying that we continue to need campaign finance reform, and in order to get there, we have to amend the Oregon Constitution. Well, as has already been pointed out, you can't get there from here. You can never, without amending the federal Constitution, limit how much money is spent in candidate elections. You can make it more difficult if you amend the Oregon Constitution, approve H.J.R. 20 and House Bill 2654. You can make it more difficult for candidates to raise the money they need to run a viable campaign. And I would submit to you that that is all that contribution limits accomplish. They require candidates to go to more people to raise the money that is necessary to carry out an election in the 21st century. What has not been discussed today at all, and I would urge the committee to think about some more, is why it has gotten more expensive to run campaigns. Is it just because the money is there to spend on campaigns? I don't think so. Campaigns have in fact gotten more expensive because the cost of doing mailings has gotten more expensive, because technology is available today that allows targeting mail at voters based on their past voting practices, based on their age and party registration. It has gotten ridiculously more expensive to purchase advertising in election campaigns. A review of the cost of TV and radio time, comparison between at every election cycle between 1974 and the 2000 campaign cycle will show you, particularly in the Portland metro area, that advertising rates for radio and television have gone up astronomically in that time period. Newspaper ads have also gotten much more expensive. Is it a problem with our current election system that it is so expensive to run a campaign? Absolutely. You cannot solve this problem, however, by just dealing with one piece of the supply side of this equation. To do comprehensive campaign finance reform, you should also be looking at creative ways to allow candidates to get their message delivered to voters in a cost-effective way. We have urged the Secretary of State to seek authority from you to pool advertising dollars, to go out and make bulk purchases of advertising, and then resell it to candidates, either at that lower cost or at a discount if public funds were there to subsidize that, particularly for statewide races. There are other options that could be looked at that would allow all qualified candidates to more effectively deliver their messages in various ways. But just cutting off the largest contributions is not going to solve this problem, is not going to make it possible for more people to run for public office, is not going to make it easier for any of you to run for re-election or to run for some other public office. And if you set the limits, assuming this were to move forward, if you set the limits at a point where today they would effectively make no change in the process, all you will be doing is making things more difficult for your successors down the road. That is what Congress did back in 1974. They thought at that time, $1,000 limit on individual contributions, $5,000 limits for PACs, would be all the money anyone would need. Well, they have found in the years since that those limits are inadequate, but it certainly is not politically popular to go back and raise those limits on contributions. Mr. Chair, that's all I have for my formal comments. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Just one brief one from me, and that is returning back to the issue of the look of impropriety, which, and away from the overall cost of elections, any thoughts about that aspect of this whole general purpose, and that is to address the look of impropriety?
Mr. Chair, I think it's very important to remember that the Oregon system is based on full disclosure. That was seen even in the beginning as the best antidote to improper influence, undue influence, if you will, on the political process. It goes without saying, I would hope, that it is a crime for any candidate or elected official to accept money in return for a present or future vote. And Oregon has been blessed with very clean politics, at least in the last 50 years. I don't think that that is an accident. I think that is largely due to the full disclosure that we have in our candidate campaigns and in our ballot measure campaigns and in other campaigns. And I think it's also important to understand that the presence of contribution limits in the federal system has not in any way held back those who talk about undue influence in the federal system of money in relation to campaigns.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Bernard.
I'm just curious if perhaps in some of your studies, since we seem to be so concerned about contribution limits, et cetera, and their effects, and one would assume that the candidate who winds up with the most money winds up with the win. Is that true?
No, it's certainly not, Ms. Chair, Representative Gerard. I think almost everyone who has analyzed expenditures in campaigns compared to the outcomes of those campaigns will tell you that there are a number of factors. Probably the most important factor is incumbency, but that can certainly be overcome by when there are overarching events that make incumbents unpopular just because they're incumbents. But it's certainly true that any candidate, in order to be viable, has to have at least a floor of funding, at least enough money to be able to build some name familiarity and get their message across to voters. And that is why the ACLU has supported public financing of elections. We supported ballot measure 6 in the last election. We're sorry that that was defeated by the voters, but we agree with others who've spoken today that any long-term campaign finance reform, any comprehensive campaign finance reform, has to provide increased public funding for candidates who qualify for the ballot. That is, we believe, the only way to really get to completely disconnect the interests of interest groups and others who want to affect the outcome of elections, is to make sure that every candidate at least has a floor of funding adequate to get their message out. But again, there is nothing, as Representative Devlin pointed out earlier, there is nothing this legislature can do or that the people of the state of Oregon can do to eliminate independent expenditures by individuals and groups in candidate elections, because that kind of activity is absolutely protected by the federal Constitution under the First Amendment. I certainly agree with the other comment that was made by Representative Starr, that if contribution limits are set too low, you will have a large increase in those types of independent expenditures. And then the campaigns are out of the hands of the candidates and directly in the hands of well-financed special interests.
Thank you. Thank you for the questions. All right, thank you very much. I have no one left on the sign-up sheet. We do have a few minutes left in committee. Anybody want to come to the table? I'd be happy to have you. All right, thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2653, HJR 20, and 2654. We have no more business before us today. Committee adjourned.